Malcolm Honlein is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations, joins us for the weekly update here at JM in the AM. Mr. Honlein, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Appreciate that. Spent most of this week in Israel, and it's a one-subject week, I can tell you that much. No matter who you speak to, from people you know to the common man to folks in the know, it seems that the 20th of September is the date that everybody's concentrating on. Let's go through the schedule first. When does this whole thing at the UN begin?
It doesn't seem to ever end, but this week, it really begins this weekend. We have our first meetings with visiting foreign ministers and others, prime ministers, starting on Sunday morning early. They're coming because there's a Clinton Global Initiative meetings, which take place at the beginning of the week, and there's also a big conference on communicative diseases that the United Nations is doing. And then the actual sessions will begin on Wednesday. The president, others will speak. It's actually on Tuesday they will have the first day, the openings. And then you will see the slew of others who will come. The Durban 3 commemorative event is on Thursday, but so far, successfully, I think it has been very diminished. We are still troubled by the statement that they're going to issue, which refers back to the Durban 1 and Durban 2 debacles.
What day does Prime Minister Netanyahu speak?
On Friday, a week from today at 12:30, and in the General Assembly. And Abbas is scheduled to speak the 14th on Friday also, but earlier. He's the 14th speaker, and Netanyahu is the 17th speaker.
So if there's news, if there's a declaration, or if there's a major movement toward all that, when will it happen?
Anytime.
This whole week?
Anytime this whole week. There are two tracks, because there's so much confusion about this, and I understand that this is really hard for people to figure out or to understand, you know, who's on first. There are two tracks the Palestinians can pursue within the United Nations. One is to go to the Security Council, which means they have to send a letter, probably on the 20th, to the Secretary General, who then submits it to the President of the Security Council, who's from Lebanon. They would take it under, he appoints a committee, they have to review it, then they come back with a recommendation whether to move on. Yesterday morning, the Foreign Minister of the Palestinian Authority announced that they would go to the Security Council. Every day, one guy says yes, one guy says no. So it's clear, A, that they're not coherent in their approach. There isn't a unity amongst the Palestinian leadership. Fayyad has all along opposed all of this. Second, that till now they have not decided what to do. They don't have the draft language yet. They don't have a clear decision. So when you see the picture of confusion, it's because that's the reality. And I can tell you that most of the members of the UN, even those who are voting against Israel, are sick and tired of it, feel that the Palestinians should, you know, make up their mind and make a decision. So the first decision would be whether they go to the Security Council. If they go for recognition, because the Security Council is the only one that can give them formal recognition, the United States will veto. It's not a question. We met yesterday with Ambassador Rice. They will veto it. The other option is that they come with a more watered-down resolution,
right,
or, for one more complication, in the Security Council, you need 9 affirmative votes for something to pass and no veto by the 5 permanent members. We do not believe at this point that they have 9 affirmative votes. If they don't have it, then I believe they won't go to the Security Council, and they also know that this is an automatic confrontation with the U.S. because they're going to force a U.S. veto. So that's a very complicated and has a lot of conditions for them to go that route. The other route is to go directly to the General Assembly. And there the question is, what would be the nature of the resolution? The Europeans are trying to work to give them an upgraded status, like the Vatican is called a non-voting member state.
Right.
There are those who want to call it a non-voting member and not give it the state part, so that he can go back and say, look, we've been elevated, we got this recognition, they can join some of the specialized agencies.
Let
me just say one thing, because this is really the critical factor there, that what Abbas has always said he wants is the ability to go to the International Criminal Court, which does not recognize Palestine as a state, and only states can go before it, or the International Court of Justice. So they feel that if they can get the recognition of a state there, that will enable them to be able to go and say, here we have recognition, 140 countries, 150 countries voted for it, and given the status that they can start going after Israelis, war crimes charges, et cetera, at the international court.
Doesn't it seem that we're heading in that direction of non-observer, I mean, rather of observer or non-member, however, whatever term you want to use for this whole General Assembly thing? Doesn't it look like we're heading in that direction because Abbas, while he's trying to downplay the what would be higher expectations, is still trying to appease the side that must see some progress at the UN? Doesn't it look like we're heading in that direction?
Well, they are non-observers now. They are observers now.
Right. So non-member state.
But as a non-member observer. But they do have a little bit of an elevated status that gives them access, and they can speak there and do other things. But, I mean, you are right that they know that there's a bottom line to this. Abbas seems to be driven with this not as an aspirational issue for the Palestinian people, but a legacy issue for him. He wants to be able to say that he got this elevated status recognition as a state, even though the General Assembly recognized Palestine in 1988, and only the United States and Israel voted against it. But he wants to be able to say he did it without any giving up on any issues, not on right of return or Jerusalem or anything, no compromise, no negotiations.
No deal.
And he is using this also because if we notice how much, the degree to which this issue now has become an accepted issue now, that everybody talks about their right to it, and not that they have to negotiate, not that they have to do anything else, but that this is their sort of inherent right. The consequences for them are, number one, that they know Congress is going to cut off aid. And whether it's all the aid or a majority of the aid, even the administration acknowledges it, everybody says that they're going to suffer. And right now, they're cut the salaries of everybody in half because they don't have money. The Arabs are not paying them up, the pledges that they gave. And so the United States' $600 million looms very large there. And if it would be cut by $400 million, $500 million, that would have a devastating impact.
And you're confident that Congress would have the nerve to continue with that?
100%.
Even if the White House pressures them otherwise?
100%.
Wow.
The question is the amount, whether it would be 50, because then, you know, also some of the money that U.S. gives, it only gives specific projects, even though money is fungible, we know. But, you know, like the money for security training is something Israel might want to see continue.
All right, so let's go now to the advantage, or whatever you want to call it, of me having been there this week, and that is that the nerves are starting to are starting to get very high. The anxiety, I should say, is starting to get very high. It seems, again, from the common folks who would know about Israel's preparedness simply based on who's being called up or who's participating in different operations and practices, etc., it seems that Israel is very worried about what may happen. The numbers of people that have been foretold, that have been put on alert, they could be called up within a week is astounding, unless it's just a coincidence that every person I spoke to happens to be, you know, getting ready to be mobilized. So does Israel, I mean, I know they have to be prepared, so there's no, you know, there's no criticism of any of anybody trying to up their security as much as possible, but do they have a lot to worry about here? Are there going to be violent confrontations no matter what ends up being the result at the UN?
So those are five or six very good questions, and let me try and take each one. Number one, I think maybe it's hyped too much, that the consequences immediately will be much more for the Palestinians the day after than for Israelis, because Palestinian leadership is going to have to explain to their people why they took all those risks, why they drove everybody crazy, and nothing will have changed the next day. The second thing is that, I mean, there are consequences, the potential consequences of a failed vote or of a vote in terms of demonstrations. They are being called for, and some of the talk has been that they would march into settlements peacefully or without weapons, and of course anything can lead to a conflagration or a confrontation there that would get out of hand. And we know that Hamas and others will try to exploit that kind of a situation, so everybody's being mobilized, because it's a very difficult situation. Israel has really prepared. They have many methods, non-lethal methods, to try and control mob scenes and to deal with it, but they can't allow a situation to get out of hand. And the PA is under pressure from the whole world to try and contain it. There are talks going on. This does not mean this is the only option. The Ashton of the European Union, Dennis Ross, and David Hale from the United States, Tony Blair from the European, from the Quartet, are all and have been in Israel this week. They are all negotiating. Everybody's talking about different formula, and there is negotiations right now with the Palestinian Authority and the EU, and supposedly they've agreed on 4 out of 20 paragraphs that would give them him a way to back down, give him a ladder to back down, which would say that for the next 6 months they will there will be immediate negotiations. One of the alternatives I know was that the Secretary General would be given the letter requesting statehood, and he would hold it till the end of the year. If there's no progress, he would submit it then to the General Assembly, which would give it more significance. There's also talk of a quartet statement. The United States is actually not engaged in that. The Europeans are much more so. The French approach is to say we want to give him everything but not to declare it a state and to keep him out of the international criminal courts, which is why I emphasize it, because that's the most singular consequence that people are concerned about right now. So they might even write that into the language, saying you can have everything but you can't go to the international court.
So when people...
That will not hold over time. The court, I just, there's a lot on this. So the United States has actually been very good. They've been very aggressive in recent weeks, reaching out to many of the other countries, trying to move countries from a yes vote to abstain or from abstain to a no. There are about 30 countries, 40 countries still in play, but especially the European Union. And the Union wants to vote as a bloc. Germany, Holland, Czech Republic, others are definitely on the Israeli side. There are about 7-8 countries who endorse unilateral declaration, and the bulk are in the middle and hanging and waiting. Plus, there are about 20 countries who vote the way the European Union votes. I mean, that's their standard. So the United Nations wants to avoid a showdown, and they don't want to have the confrontation. U.S. and everybody else, knowing how tense the region is, wants to avoid a showdown. The Russians have been playing a very negative role. The French, very mixed role. Germany has been good. The Cameron, we're waiting to see. He has done some better, good things this week.
Right.
But so the demonstrations and the potential for violence is an immediate concern, because that would happen. That could happen this week. There are demonstrations, you know, taking place already, and they can easily get out of hand or be exploited. But on the other hand, you have all of these diplomatic tracks because people want to avoid it. And I think Netanyahu has by and large played it right, and he will be coming next week, something he had been debating whether to do or not.
Whether he should be here or not. So when you're told the word is getting around, so to speak, you know, we're going to war. We're going to war. There's going to be a war. There's going to, you know, we're getting ready. Because a lot of that is... Again, just the hype, I guess, that comes from the preparedness, right?
Right. And there's no inevitability, but the necessity, as you said, nobody wants to see something happen afterwards, and then they say, and have investigations,
right,
and commissions that saying, why were you guys not ready? And I don't think Abbas is coming out of this, the victor, the way that it's being portrayed. And the Israeli press, some of the Israeli press, I should say, is guilty of this as well. You know, President Obama, I don't think, has spoken to Abbas since February.
Right.
And he calls this a distraction. And I must say that the statements and the actions that we've seen of late have really been very assertive, and they're working closely with Israel. And you don't hear criticism of Israel in this context now. Obviously, there always is the criticism about, you know, people making unilateral changes. They mean the settlements. The other side, we're talking about this effort to create a state, which violates Oslo and violates all the previous agreements that Israel has reached, and especially compounded when the foreign minister and the PLO representative here and even Abbas himself talk about it being Judenfrein without Jews, the free of Jews, no Israelis living there. It only compounds the concerns and the feelings of Israelis.
Unbelievable. What a situation. It's America's one and only Jewish Moments in the Morning radio program, heard on listeners sponsored WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, around the world on the web, jmnam.org. The Cameron reference was about Durban 3, right?
No, Durban 3 is separate. And as I said, our position on Durban 3 is to play it down, not to give it recognition. The United Nations structured it so that it would be minimized. even Ahmadinejad is speaking against the at the time when Durban 3 is going on, because they try to, I think, put controversial speakers.
No, what I mean is your reference to the good things he did this week was pulling out, right?
Right. So right. Cameron, no, but it's also in terms of the negotiations, because the French are trying to line up the British behind their position, and Cameron has made some statements finally this week, and we know of internal stuff that goes on in the EU where Britain has played a more constructive role. They did a very good thing this week, which was to announce, even though it's late, that they will not participate in Durban 3. Poland also announced that. So there is a growing chorus of democratic countries, which is exactly how you diminish the significance of this conference. And as I said, the only thing we're concerned about now, even though Ahmadinejad may try to speak there, there's only a couple of hours in the afternoon when other things are going on. Main speakers, major speakers are at the podium of the General Assembly, and they have these workshops where people can speak for 3 minutes each.
Right.
The rest of it is not. So there, the British have joined some of the other countries in announcing. You know, Germany already announced, Australia announced. Some of the countries, like Romania, have said that they can't because they're one of the regional groupings and they're scheduled to speak at the opening session.
Wow. Tell us about last weekend, Israeli embassy in Cairo.
Okay. You know, this is a very significant event, not because it's of such overwhelming significance, the number of people who participated, but one, that the Egyptian army didn't respond immediately. Two, that the United States did respond immediately to Netanyahu's entreaties and put the screws on Tantawi and got them to finally go in with troops, which was essential because he had six security guards who remained in the building, and they were literally protected by one steel door from a raging mob. And we have seen in the past where lynchings take place in such circumstances.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And the failure to respond immediately. On the other hand, you know that they had called a million-man march in Cairo, and a couple hundred people showed up. And we shouldn't think that this is massive, but there is adherent in Egyptian society both an anti-Jewish but also an anti-Israel bias. It's fed by a lot of the media and the government statements. And the fact is that if you look at a lot of places, I mean universities, others that are in places of prominent schools that are named for key dates in their war with Israel, like the 6th of October for the Yom Kippur War, there's both dates in the Arabic and in the English dates. It's pervasive. There was an evacuation of the Jordanian embassy in the expectation of big demonstrations that were called for primarily on the internet, and a couple hundred people showed up. But when you see the reports, it lumps it together with a demonstration in Turkey outside the stadium where the Maccabi team is going to play.
They played. They lost.
They lost, right. So they had to lose, I think. They lost. Then they would have been accused again of imperialism and...
Oh, I thought you knew.
Before the international court.
I thought you meant you knew who was on the take over there. I'm sorry.
Everybody. Erdogan, we've discussed on the show, has a long history as an Islamist. I met ambassadors who served when he was mayor of Istanbul, and they told me that this was all true then, that they saw him, the term evil was used.
Wow.
He sees Hamas as a legitimate partner. And the flotilla he describes as a cause of war.
Right.
He is exploiting it. He's threatening to go to international court. As you know, he's putting ships in the Mediterranean. He's going to accompany the flotillas. I think a lot of those things will, in fact, not happen. But it's not something that you dismiss. I mean, Turkey is a powerful country with great significance. They want to now disregard the UN report and go to the International Court of Justice that the blockade is illegal. And the various other threats, he wants to be, Erdogan sees himself as the resurrection of the Ottoman Empire. He went to Cairo because he wanted to get this hero's welcome. He sees himself as the leader of the Arabs. The Arabs don't want a Turkish leader, nor an Iranian, because they are not Arabs. And he was told that by the Muslim Brotherhood, that we welcome you and we think you're important, all that, but don't think you're going to be the leader here. And so he has this grandiose view of his role and of Turkey's ultimate role. The Arabs have a long memory about the Ottoman Empire and what it cost them. So he is using Israel to incite and also to gain his creds because with Iran, because he took, you know, he's in opposition to them over Syria. And you notice how Syria has faded in the headlines, and there's almost no discussion. Yemen, where, you know, Saleh has said that he designated somebody to negotiate on his behalf, but you don't read about this, still the confrontations and the conflict going on in these places.
Yeah. Israelis seem to have, to many of them, a warm place in their heart for Turkey. I assume it's because so many of them have traveled there, right? So they'd like to see a better relationship.
Turkey is a key ally of Israel, and geopolitically it was very significant, and much of its posture in the region was anchored by Turkey on one side, Egypt on the other. And now both of these things are in flux, to say the least. Second, as you said, there are hundreds of thousands, millions of Israelis who visited Turkey. They used to have 700,000 Israelis go every year, I think, to Turkey. That was a big part of their tourism industry, which has suffered. Second, you have a big Turkish Jewish population in Israel, and they had close relations going back and forth, and family on one side or the other. There's still about 25,000 Jews, I guess, in Turkey. And also because the military relationship was very special. It was the military who were always the protectors of the Ataturk, the secular tradition. And he has successfully, Erdogan, diminished them and used the West as a cover. When the Europeans kept demanding that the military has to be under civilian control and pushed them to diminish the role of the military. And today, many of the officers were arrested, others just dismissed. A group of the top ones quit in the hope of inciting some reaction, and nothing happened.
In light of what happened last week, is there still an Egyptian ambassador in Israel or an Egyptian embassy in Israel?
Yes, sure. There's an embassy in Tel Aviv.
Now that there's none in Cairo.
No, there is an embassy. The embassy remains open. The ambassador will return.
Oh, he will return.
They are looking at the possibility of moving the location.
Wow.
To a more secure one, but yes, he will return, and there are still diplomatic ties. There is an Israeli delegation in Egypt right now, so they continue to talk. By the way, when you mentioned about England, England also took a very important additional step, which ties into, you know, these efforts at the international court, and that is there's a concept of universal jurisdiction, which is not applicable in the United States, but in Europe, anybody can bring a charge against anybody that they accuse them of violating war crimes, rights, etc. England has experienced a whole slew of these cases, so that Israeli leaders like Livni and Barak and others had to cancel visits or
right.
in some cases couldn't get off the plane in England. The Queen signed a bill yesterday which limits that and takes away the ability, meaning that Israeli officials can now visit the... They said that essentially it says when there's no realistic chance of prosecution, then people can't be detained. So we know that, and honoring their international obligations. So that essentially obviates the use of universal jurisdiction. Other European countries still have it. But that was an additional move that finally came about. This is legislation that's been in the planning since, I don't know, a year and a half.
Could you give me the rest of the embassy updates? I know there were threats to throw Israel out of Amman. I know that I'd like to remember what's happening now with Turkey officially, if there are embassies in each other's countries or not. Could you remind us, please?
Yes, there are. The Turkish embassy continues to function. There are lower-level people there. The ambassador was removed. They told the rest of the staff to get out by Wednesday. They'll probably just leave some skeletal presence there. In Amman, it's fully going to be fully functional today. The ambassador is going back. It was a one-day, preventative move by the government because they were afraid that there would be another Egyptian-like march, but it turned out to fizzle. It was only a couple hundred people who demonstrated. And as I already reported about where the embassy in Egypt stands.
Right. All right. There are people who are going to be blocking traffic on Tuesday in New York, and we'll give details to everybody about that demonstration if they want it a little later on in the show. Malcolm, as I said to you a few weeks ago, I think it's a very difficult spot for Jewish leadership right now because, unfortunately, we know that people are not used to hitting the streets like the old days when it comes to an important cause. On the other end, I'm sure you're hearing right and left from people who would love to gather in Manhattan next week. Is there any update on that whole thing?
You know, it's very interesting that people say they would love to do it, but when we call demonstrations, they're not there.
Exactly.
And it's not universally applicable, but it's certainly true for the vast majority.
And I just want to make it clear, 3,000-4,000 is not enough. That's another one of your points, right?
No, but 10,000 is not enough.
Right.
If we put our name on something,
exactly,
it's got to be really big. The problems also are the logistics. You can't move in New York next week. Many areas are frozen zones. You can't get near the United Nations. And Doug Hammarskjöld is booked every minute with a demonstration, at least 3-4 demonstrations simultaneously. So police are not even giving permits for some of these manifestations. There are going to be some. There's going to be a tent that is set up with Yuli Edelstein. Minister Edelstein will be there. There will be other events, human rights conferences at the time of Durban 3. But it was a decision, A, on terms of Durban 3, not to do demonstrations, because why would we want to call more attention when the United States, Israel, and everybody else is trying to downplay it?
Then what about the PA statehood issue?
Diminish. Well, first of all, we don't know when that will be. It more likely will not come up till the end of the month, or October, even then. It could come up much later. There could be a letter, Abbas's speech next Friday could be a turning point. On the other hand, you may have a letter submitted at any time starting the process, but nothing tangible. And when you have the president and everybody else in town, and buses can't get near the place, others, and you can't just do a demonstration. As we see, the media dismisses it completely. When we had 30,000, 25,000 out for Ahmadinejad or other things, nobody covered it. And I understand people's desire. And we're looking at all the options, the JCRC in New York and others who really are responsible for turning out in terms of demonstrations. We have a lot of things are going on. It's not that things aren't happening. Believe me, every minute, every day, from early morning, and this has been going on for 3-4 months, we have...
Right, but the average guy like me wants to feel he's doing something.
So we can write letters. We have action recommendations that we're sending out. People can... first of all, we have to see about when Netanyahu speaks. There will be, we want to fill the United Nations, but that's not thousands, that's scores or hundreds, small hundreds. Maybe to have a manifestation, we're looking at it. The problem is that getting permits from the police and getting the right set up, it's something that will get attention. I don't want people frustrated to come out and they say, oh, we didn't see him or he didn't turn out the way we wanted. Believe me, I hear all of that too. Must say that there hasn't been pressure. People get it. People understand how this has been going on, what we've been doing, and literally working for 8-9 months around the clock. We have, I can tell you now, scores of meetings with heads of state, foreign ministers, and this is at our level, on the national level, what we're doing with the United States, the pressure we've been bringing on the Europeans, the efforts, and this is also a decision of the foreign ministry of Israel not wanting these demonstrations. And there are a lot of other reasons why it's not a good idea.
So is it possible that 5 years ago, when the efforts were strong and, you know, we were helping and getting the word out and all that, is it possible that the Israeli government at that time felt it worthwhile to take to the streets and now they're simply thinking differently?
They're thinking differently, one, because the circumstance is different. Two, we have to take into account the logistical and safety issues and other issues.
And the numbers, right?
I mean, there are immense requirements. People don't understand. If you take Doug Hammarskjöld, there's requirements for insurance.
Oh, I was thinking otherwise. You take Doug Hammarskjöld, there better be 100,000 people there.
Well, there's got to be 30, 40, 50,000. And the truth is that if you didn't have the schools and we didn't have a few others, all the people who say, oh, I'll be there, I want to come.
Yeah.
And I do believe people come. And what we want to do is that if, in fact, we're going to do something on the Palestinian thing, if we call a demonstration and that whole thing changes and they don't do it,
mm-hmm.
and people are going to be really angry, and the next time we call them, they're not going to answer.
Right.
So,
no, I hear you.
And you know that I am absolutely in favor of going to the streets whenever it's necessary, and have organized more demonstrations than any Jew in America, and big demonstrations. But you got to know when to do it, and also with whom we do it. There is a problem with one of the demonstrations that's planned where you have a Messianic Jewish group as a key sponsor. We cannot do it with groups like that. There are other, complications like that people don't know, but that dictate. But when they explain to them, then everybody says, oh, we get it.
Understood. It's going to be quite a week, that's for sure.
And we got to look. There are many other things that are, potentially taking place that beyond that. I mean,
meaning in the UN itself now, or...?
In the UN, around the UN, because there are a lot of speeches and a lot of things that could take place. But because of this, Iran's nuclear program gets almost no attention, and they're taking advantage of this. The Russians have said they were looking to expand the program, and Ahmadinejad, you know, talked this week of 9/11 being a U.S. plan to start wars, and you know, all of this stuff is being ignored in some of the Palestinian declarations about the state and about other things that would normally get a lot of attention, because there's such overload right now. And people I know come to me and they call me and they say, could you explain, just explain it. And you can't just explain, because it's much more complicated. And that's why I went into more detail, because the UN can go at least a dozen different directions.
Right, but I have to admit, as we get closer, it's getting a drop more clearer, because finally it's on the horizon.
Right, and but still, even though we're days away,
right,
there are still a dozen different things. We have meetings going on. We're planning for the day after, which is maybe when we will need a massive demonstration, or, you know, if the issue actually comes before the
right.
General Assembly.
Right.
And if you want to influence the members of the General Assembly, it is not through demonstrations. That's something else people have to understand. We have to look at how do we achieve the end we want. And I understand the frustration. Believe me, I wish I could just say, let's have a demonstration, and people would vent their spleens and they would feel better. But mm-hmm. The question is, what will it have changed in this regard?
Are you aware of the MTA campaign, where a group that's trying to, you know, from the PA side is trying to encourage this vote in the UN?
There are people who are saying that Israel should vote for it, and there are people who are saying, if that's what you mean, or saying that...
Well, they're actually putting ads on billboards in the MTA, the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, for those of you outside of New York. 18 subway stations are getting these billboards.
Well, there are two sets of billboards. One is anti-Israel, calling for a cut in military aid that is inside the subway stations and elsewhere. And then there is going to be ads about the campaign, but it's not really to vote yes for the Palestinian state. This is supporting Israel's position.
Okay. Maybe I'm reading something else.
But there are other billboards. There's billboards on Ahmadinejad around. There are other campaigns which may or may not be visible but will be effective. As I said, when people think there's nothing happening, it isn't so. There is a lot happening, but it's not always identifiable or associated. And...
Okay. So the one I'm referring to is okay. It's one and the same. I didn't realize it. It is in fact pull military aid away from Israel.
Right.
That is okay. That's the one. Okay, I got
that's
you.
That's anti-Israel.
Right. That's the anti-Israel. Okay. That's what I see here now. But the reason I bring it up is because you're always hesitant when it comes to advertising campaigns to call for boycotts, to, you know, to encourage people to call and complain. So I wanted to know if there's an action on this one or not.
The Lou Fidler of the city council is working on it. I know I've spoken to some of the local groups who have said that they are attending to it, but because we're going to have pro-Israel ads,
right,
we protest.
Understood.
Anti, they're going to take away the pro.
No, I get your position. I just want to make sure that the right people who are on the front lines when it comes
People from the first day they've been on it. This is not, again, not something we would do. This is a New York issue.
Right, understood.
But obviously everything that happens this week has implications that we look at and we explore everything. And people have written me and given me sometimes very good information about something that is about to happen or is happening. One of the things is that this is an opportunity, especially with the schools back in session,
mm-hmm.
that people talk to the children and explain to them what this is about and you know, what the challenge is to Israel, because they're going to read about it. They're going to see this. And I will tell you, there will be a lot of negative things said and Israel's history distorted. It's a very important opportunity for people and teachers in schools, especially to explain this. And we're making a lot of progress. I met with groups yesterday, working on curricula, working on things specifically geared to high schools and to even to younger children, hopefully. By the way, another interesting development is that the Palestinians now took over the presidency of the Arab League. So, you know, it pretty much locks that.
So I guess
they have the presidency of the Security Council this month, the presidency of the General Assembly for the year, and now the presidency of the Arab League, Iran in the chair of the non-aligned movement. I mean, this is really a great constellation.
You know what it reminds us? Reminds us there is a God.
There's a God, and I think that people should not become panicked by this, and we shouldn't exaggerate it. I think sometimes the language that's being used... I told leaders in Israel this week that if I could ask you to do one thing at a cabinet meeting, it's just two words, shut up.
Wow.
Because so many of the statements that are coming out are detrimental, and people
right.
use language
right.
that exacerbates situations, takes the focus off the real things, and you know, we have such serious issues that you add to the confusion, it's only detrimental, not helpful.
Oh, that's true. By the way, how chilling was it to see a proposal come from a member of the Fogel family of exchanging the convicted Fogel murderers for Gilad Shalit?
Yeah, it's a very courageous.
Does that say it all about the Jewish people or what?
That is, it's such an amazing declaration.
Gosh.
Again, you notice that, how much coverage that got.
Yeah, of course.
As opposed to the thing and about Gilad Shalit's 25th birthday. We had Mr. Shalit here last week. We had him. We did a wonderful event at the city council.
Yeah, we gave you all the kol hakavod for that, 100%.
But, you know, it's so important that we keep it in the front, that we not let people forget. And one of the things that Mr. Shalit did was to say, go visit some of the ambassadors and say, if you think you're going to vote for this, at least demand something. You want to admit a country. How do you admit a country that is holding or is associated with a terrorist organization that's holding him in violation of every U.N. Regulation and every U.N. issue? The other thing, by the way, is nobody focuses on what's happening in Libya, where we see the emergence of these extremists and the Muslim Brotherhood types, Al-Qaeda types.
As you predicted.
As I write, that would happen. And the developments there. And we will. That's another story that we're going to have to...
Any Libyans speaking this week at the UN?
Yes.
And that'll be who?
They did not designate the name, but it'll probably be, you know, like a foreign minister type of the interim government. But the Syrians are also scheduled to speak, and that's going to be interesting to see who will come, you know, and risk arrest or whatever. But I can't imagine unless they have an ambassador, unless their ambassador or somebody gets up and gives the address.
What do you think of these events or protests, maybe the wrong word? What do you think of the efforts that are being made to keep educational institutions and other types of groups from hosting Ahmadinejad while he's here?
It's imperative. The guy should not be able to go anywhere. He should not be hosted by anybody. The story about Columbia is not correct.
Oh.
This was a group of students, or a student, actually, who extended the invitation. Columbia University had nothing to do with it, and it was never to be at Columbia University. And I know people started condemning them right away.
Yeah.
When we looked into it, the facts were completely different. It had nothing to do with the university. This was to be held off campus, and it's not even clear that it's happened.
So a good message as we get into this week is don't believe. We'll speak next Friday about what's happened, but don't believe everything you read in the next 7 days.
Right, and try to look at the facts and discern it. You know, we have a lot of Israeli reporters who are interested also in exacerbating situations,
right.
exploiting it
right.
for political purposes. So just because it says comes from Israel doesn't make it a fact either. There are, again, so many balls in the air. I hardly even touch on how many different levels of negotiations and what the difference in the resolutions and what the content will be.
All right. Malcolm,
you
have a very big week ahead. Get a restful Shabbos, please.
Okay.
Malcolm Holman is Executive Vice Chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. I highly recommend 7 days from now you tune in for our conversation as we'll analyze the events of this coming week here at JM in the AM.